This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits started just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
What's happening, everyone? We appreciate you guys for listening to the Wildcast podcast on Apple, Spotify. You can also find the video on Tucson.com as well. Make sure you subscribe today. We're going to be talking a lot of Arizona football, and we'll be answering your mailbag questions. And as we turn the page to Arizona's big home game against the BYU Cougars, which is now number 18 in the country. Last week, they were number 23. Now they're number 18. And it's the undefeated BYU Cougars coming to town. Some could say this might be the biggest home game of the Brent Brennan era. So we'll have our podcast later on in the week, really having a deep dive on the BYU Cougars and previewing that game. We'll kind of look at it today, but we'll be answering your mailbag questions and taking a look at that. Some Arizona football stuff, also some non-football stuff, Lev, that I'm excited to answer today. But we do have some news that, I mean, we're recording this podcast on Monday, and I think the most important news, first and foremost, Noah Fifita, in addition to becoming a Caniac ambassador, endorsing Raising Cane's, Noah Fifita, he's got an NIL deal with Raising Cane's. Noah Fifita is living my dream right now. But Noah Fifita was also named Big 12 Offensive Player of the Week, along with TCU quarterback Josh Hoover. And this comes after Noah Fifita passed for 378 yards and also 5 touchdowns against Oklahoma State last week. One of many 5 touchdown performances in Noah Fifita's career. I would say this was probably his best passing performance of the season. Found 4 different receivers for touchdowns, including 2 to Trey Spivey, who scored those 2 in that first quarter. Had some tough runs as well. I was really impressed with the yak for Arizona's receivers, but I thought all in all, Noah Fifita played a great game, probably his best of the season in terms of passing. Made one of the best plays of his career, in my opinion, with that 47-yard touchdown pass to Luke Weisong, missing a couple of sacks. I mean, he was sacked nearly twice in that play, and then was able to break free, found Luke Weisong for a touchdown. So it was a great game for Noah Fifita. And then also a little piece of news: Arizona will be kicking off next week's game against the Houston Cougars at 9 a.m. Tucson time, which will be 11 a.m. over in Houston, which, I mean, if we're looking at history, Lev, doesn't really bode well for the Wildcats because they got killed the last time they played a morning game, which was at Houston. It was the first season under head coach Kevin Sumlin, and the Wildcats just got killed by Houston. But I feel a little bit better about this year's Arizona team going up against the Houston Cougars. Now, Houston is a good team this year. They just lost their first game of the season to Texas Tech last week. But I still think this game coming up here against Houston, I think Arizona will look much different. But big one against BYU this week. Lev, what do you think about Noah Fifita becoming the player of the week? And then also, what do you think about this morning kickoff against Houston?
Well, first of all, regarding Noah, it was definitely his best performance of this season. You know, the other one that was statistically comparable was Weber State, and that's Weber State, right?
Yeah.
Now look, Oklahoma State is not in good shape right now. Their defense is not good. But, you know, Arizona and Noah took advantage of what they were given in that game. According to Brent Brennan, they were stacking the box against Arizona, trying to make them one-dimensional. They succeeded in that regard. I mean, they did not run the ball well at all after the first quarter, but they lit it up through the air. They had over 400 yards passing, 5 touchdown passes. What's funny about Noah's performance is I still feel like he can be better.
Yeah.
Right? And there's still a few missed throws. There were a couple plays that required like great catches by Trey Spivey. Trey Spivey looked awesome in that game to me. Like he's really in the midst of a mini breakout here. He doesn't get like a ton of volume, but he really has capitalized on the opportunities he's gotten. He's shown us dimensions to his game that we did not know he had when he first got here. He was basically like a classic X receiver, everything on the sideline, jump balls, 50-50. He's running after the catch. He's catching the ball away from his frame. A lot of good stuff there. So I think it's a progression for Noah. Like you want to see him just get a little bit better, a little bit more comfortable each week. This is the biggest test coming up. I mean, this BYU team beat him up and beat up Arizona last year at physical pounding, like probably unlike anything he's ever experienced. Just can't let that happen again. And we'll get into all that later in the week with the offensive line issues and all that stuff. Regarding the Houston start time, I got to admit a little bit of PTSD when I saw that. Because that was the exact same start time as that game in 2018. That was the second game of the Kevin Sumlin era coming off the opening loss to BYU. And it was a disaster down there. I think the final score was 45-18, which is super weird. It really wasn't that close. I've told this story before, but it's worth retelling. So a bunch of scouts and media attended that game because Clemson was facing Texas A&M at night. And so in College Station. So people were like, we can go to both, right?
Watch
like,
Khalil Tate.
Watch Khalil Tate, a little double dip here. It was such a lopsided game that all of those national writers and scouts left at halftime.
That's crazy.
They were just like, nah, I'm not going to bother. So that was a terrible afternoon / morning. Down in Houston for the Arizona football program. Would like to think that you're going to see a better version of the Wildcats in that game coming up at Houston. But first things first is the BYU matchup. And that is, I agree with you completely. This is the biggest home game of the Brent Brennan era. I think the stadium's going to be full. Two teams with a combined record of 9-1. Sort of pseudo longtime rivals. The only thing that could put a damper on this, Justin, I'm looking at the forecast here, it might rain on Saturday. So, you know, maybe can we just reverse jinx this out of the universe here? I mean, the last thing we want is any sort of a delay or disruption, to, you know, what should be a great night at Arizona Stadium. So let's hope that that's a typical kind of Tucson weather forecast where there's dire warnings of rain. And then by the time we get to it, there basically is none.
Is there an anti-rain dance?
Look that up. Get research on that.
What can we do?
It is odd. Usually they're like, once we pass the monsoon season, it's like mid-September. Like it doesn't rain here till maybe December, but it looks like there's some sort of weather coming in this weekend. So I don't know. We'll see. Can't control that.
Yeah.
Nothing we can do about it. Hope for the best.
Lev, you mentioned PTSD with the Houston game. Mm. I got PTSD on Saturday when we were talking about Arizona's 4-1 start, which is the best one since 2019. And I'm like, oh, well, what happened after that? 20-game losing streak for the Wildcats. So it is an impressive start for Arizona, but we'll see if they can get to their fifth win. I do feel good that they're not going to lose 20 straight games after this point, but you never know.
They're not favored to beat BYU. I would be surprised if they beat BYU, but there are many winnable games on the schedule, right? I mean, Connor Wegman got hurt in that game for Houston.
Yeah.
Against Texas Tech on Saturday. So we don't know his status. That's a huge, huge deal for that offense. And Kansas is a really good offense. They have a vulnerable defense. That's a winnable game. I think at Cincinnati is going to be tough. Colorado is beatable.
Yeah.
Right. And I would say Baylor's beatable too. So that's four or five potential wins the rest of the way. I think anything at this point, I'd say that the goalposts have moved a little. Your expectations change when you start 4-1. I would say 7-5 would feel somewhat satisfactory, right? Given where they're at and where they've been. But, that's a long way off. 1 week at a time.
Yep.
BYU this week.
All right. Let's answer some Arizona football mailbag questions. I put out the cat signal and got a lot. Lev, I know you have a bunch. So take it away. You get us started.
All right. This one comes from Arizona Wildcats Supreme. It says, random one for you. Since bringing paw print decals, there seems to be a big discrepancy in the number of stickers given, with Fifita having the lion's share. If noting wins, shouldn't all players have three? Why do almost all defensive players have only one, i.e. Genesis Smith? Is that by design? Okay. I will admit, I did not notice if they had the decals on these red helmets.
They did.
That they wore this last week. Okay. Did you pay any attention to how many paw prints were on the helmets? And if so, what is your analysis of that?
I noticed Noah Fifita had a bunch, but as far as the defensive guys go, I didn't really notice anything. Now, I mean, it could just be the way that the players are placing them on their helmets. Like, a guy like Genesis Smith, maybe that guy only saw the one paw print on one side of the helmet, and then he's got some on the other side. I don't, have a full analysis of Genesis Smith and how many paw print decals or paw claw decals on the helmets, but I mean, all of them should have some. I mean, what gets you a paw claw or a claw decal is an explosive play, turnover / takeaway, an impactful play, and then a win. So everyone should have the decal on it. But of course, Noah Fifita, the guy that throws touchdowns and the guy that is the most prominent offensive player, of course he's going to have the most decals on the helmet. So yeah, I guess we got to pay more attention to that.
There might be different standards too, depending on who the coaches are. Like Danny Gonzalez might have higher standards for stickers. He's got super high standards, period. For what he considers to be good defense,
yeah,
right. So I will try to pay a little bit more attention to how many stickers guys have. It's hard for us to see from the press box. We're paying attention to a lot of different things, but an interesting question, I think, and worth exploring. Like if you're gonna do this, which they're doing now, like make it fair, yeah. Right? Like it shouldn't be just be that like. One guy gets a bunch and other people don't. Okay. All right. Let's see. What else do we got here? This is from Garrett Lutz. Speaking purely from a cultural and vibes perspective, does it feel like the program has good momentum moving forward? I know it's early and those things can change rapidly, but a program like U of A, where recruiting elite talent is hard, feels like good internal culture is key. I would say... Yeah. In a word, yes. Like if I was to say that anything is the most sort of promising thing to come out of 2025 as it pertains to U of A football, I would say that it's those things. It's the culture and the vibes. Everyone is on the same page. They've all bought in. There seems to be like good cohesion among the coaches. Recruiting seems to be going pretty well. From what I can tell. So I'd say, yeah. Affirmative on this one. What do you think?
And I got to give this coaching staff a lot of credit. You know, when you looked at some of these transfer portal additions, you're like, okay, they were great, but they were great at group of five schools, right? Or FCS schools. Can they perform on the big stage? I think Ismail Mahdi has shown that he can perform on the big stage. Guys like Malachi Bailey, you know, I mean, he is a starter, like a guy that's worthy of starting on the Arizona defensive line, but he is a, you know, key rotational piece that comes in from time to time. He's made some starts this year, but you know, I just feel like they've done a really good job of scouting players and, you know, finding those diamond in the rough types that are more likely to come to Arizona than some of these other highly touted recruits. And so I think, and really that was a Dick Tomey thing. You know, Dick Tomey thrived on that in finding those walk-ons, those, you know, players that aren't really being recruited. And then he turned them into really just quality players. And I feel like we're kind of getting a little bit of that with this year's Arizona staff. And just the, like you said, Lev, the vibes are good right now with Arizona football. And it feels like this is really Brent Brennan's culture. You know, last year it was him just kind of preserving the momentum and the hype that Jed Fish generated. And he wanted to do everything to kind of keep that. Because, I mean, this team won 10 games in 2023. You want to, you know, win 10 games and live up to those expectations. And now that Brent Brennan and his staff went through the year and they took their lumps and they realized, okay, what we did last year, we cannot do that again. So let's really put our fingerprints on this program. And I think they did a great job of that with putting the coaches in the right spot, making sure that they're keeping the nucleus of players that they had from the season prior, like Noah Fifita and Genesis Smith and Traydon Stukes and Dalton Johnson. But then you add to those pieces, and I think they've done a really good job of that. And this is really Brent Brennan's team. How this looks the final six games of the season, we'll see, because Arizona's going to be playing up against some tougher opponents. But yeah, I think the vibes are good. The culture is good right now, and this program is heading in the right direction.
I think that, as silly as it was, Brent Brennan wearing the alt jersey, the Sandstorm jersey, coming into the meeting room with a helmet on, you know, taking it off, the players going nuts. Like, that's the type of thing that illustrates the culture. Like, that says to me, like, Brent feels comfortable in his own skin now. Whereas maybe we didn't see that side of him last year. And we would talk about it amongst ourselves. Like, Brent seemed like kind of, like
on eggshells. Like
yes, exactly. And he seems like he's much more comfortable just being himself this year. And I think that's important because, you know, he got hired for this job for a reason. I think his biggest asset as a coach is building a culture. And I think we're starting to see it this year, whereas we didn't really see it quite as much last year, where it was, you know, it was like, was it really his team? It was partially his team. He came in late, all that jazz. Okay. Moving on to the next one. This one is from Tim Taylor. Anyone on D project as a potential NFL player, or who is the best prospect?
Okay. First of all, please tell me his handle is Toolman.
This is Toolman51. Yes.
Okay. I'm like, with a name like Tim Taylor, you got to be the Toolman.
This is Toolman51. Correct. All right. So I think the best prospect on defense is Genesis Smith.
Yeah.
He is a true junior. So he has another year of eligibility after this one. We'll see how the rest of the season goes. I mean, you got to be really good to go straight to the NFL after 3 years, right? Like, that's a Teterone McMillan type of player, Jonas Abaniya. I don't know if Genesis is on that level. We'll see. But he's probably number one. The guys that they've talked about internally, who've gotten the most love from NFL teams, might surprise some people. Traydon Stukes is one of them. Traydon has got great, he's got really good size. He's got defensive versatility. He was a track guy in high school, so he's a really explosive athlete. The problem is he had a major knee injury, right? That he's coming back from. So that's maybe lowered his stock a little bit. We'll see, but that is someone that I think is of interest to NFL teams. Said position versatility, maybe special teams, obviously great character. And then the other one is Trey Smith, who's kind of, he got banged up earlier this season, hasn't been like super productive since he came back, a little quiet, but he's got size, right? He's like legit like 6'5", 270. He's just learning to be a more well-rounded pass rusher under Joe Salabea. He's got the tools that NFL teams look for. And a lot of times when it comes to the draft, they're drafting traits, and Trey Smith has traits.
Yeah, Tre'Davious Stoops, I think, is, you know, the ideal NFL player, whether he's a, you know, defensive back, a corner, nickel type. He's certainly going to stand out on special teams. Kind of reminds me a little bit of, remember Dane Cruickshank several years ago?
Of course, yeah, of course.
Like, Dane got on the NFL, or got with the Tennessee Titans, and also I think the Chicago Bears, because of his long frame and his versatility as a corner and nickel. And then he was also a special teams player too. I think Tre'Davious Stoops is kind of more in line with a Dane Cruickshank type of player, but I think Tre'Davious Stoops will actually stick in the NFL longer than Dane did. And as far as, you know, Trey Smith, you know, my thing about Trey Smith was, is he too skinny to play in the NFL? But then he's really done a good job of developing his body and packing on good weight on that 6'5 frame. And then we saw him get in the backfield against Oklahoma State. I get it, it's Oklahoma State, but him with that pass breakup in the backfield, like, he has shown a lot that he is capable of being a quality NFL player. So, yeah, I agree with Tre'Davious Stoops and Trey Smith. Genesis Smith, I think he's an NFL type of player. Michael Dansby said last week that he is NFL ready right now. But then, you know, I guess measuring stick for whether Genesis Smith is an NFL player or not is Lathan Ransom, who was drafted out of Ohio State in the fourth round a year ago. Is Genesis Smith better than Lathan Ransom, who was an all Big Ten safety? If he's better than him, or maybe at the same level, then I could totally see Genesis Smith going and being like a late day two, early day three type of player. Or maybe he can come back for another season and really work his way into being a first round pick.
Yeah, I am not sure that Genesis is a three and out caliber player. Like I said, I mean, that's kind of reserved for the elite of the elite this year. So that'll be an interesting little off-season storyline once we get there. Like, is Genesis going to be back here? Is some other school going to offer him a giant bag of money to try to entice him to play for them for 1 year? Or will he go to the NFL? If I were him, I would, you know, I think you can do this, right? You put yourself in the pool and see what happens.
Yeah.
I think you can do that with football. Basketball guys do it all the time. And maybe even enter the portal too. Just,
yeah,
you want to keep all your options open when you get to that point in your career. Okay. This one comes from Bear Down Beat MM. He asks, as talented as the defense is, should we be less or more aggressive as we head deeper into Big 12 play? I almost said Pac 12.
Oh, almost wearing, said the X's wearing name.
Wearing my Pac 12 polo here. It very much feels riskier to me. Well, I don't know if we saw like the maximum amount of aggressiveness against Oklahoma State, but I feel like we're going to see it against BYU.
Yeah.
Like, whatever form that takes, whether that's like tons of blitzes, exotic blitzes, showing blitz looks and backing off, like, Danny Gonzalez is going to throw the kitchen sink at Bear Bachmeier in this game. Bear Bachmeier, who's a true freshman quarterback for BYU, has played excellent football so far. I think he has one turnover in five games.
One interception.
He's gone on the road. He's won. The goal is to confuse him, right? To show him stuff, like cloudy the picture for him. I do not think that Danny Gonzalez is going to take his foot, lift his foot up off the pedal at all. I think they're going to continue to be uber aggressive. And I think they need to be, because they can't just line up against a team like BYU and expect to win without scheming the game up a little bit.
Yeah. And you know, some could say, well, look at the Iowa State game, right? They were a little aggressive. And then look what Iowa State did in the passing game. A lot of plays over the top, a lot of big passing plays. But the thing about that Iowa State game is, like, and Danny even, I think either Danny or Brent, or maybe both, referenced that the cornerbacks were in positions to make plays. Like, a lot of the times it was just in those 50-50 situations, Iowa State it was just their day when it came to that. And so maybe you're not going to see as many explosive plays against BYU, but yeah, I think that Danny Gonzalez, I mean, nothing. I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. They're the only team in college football without allowing a passing touchdown. So I think what Danny Gonzalez has going on right now, it works, albeit I know it's against, you know, inferior competition, right? The only game that Arizona was favored to lose. Were they favorites or underdogs for the K-State game?
They were slight underdogs, I think two and a half points.
Well, then it went
back and forth.
Okay. Well, my point, but I can't make that point because I'm saying they won all the games that they were favored, they won.
Yeah, I mean, that was basically a pick'em.
Yeah.
You know, that line was fluctuating back and forth. But they've gone on the road. We talked about this going into the season. They have a favorable front half of the schedule, right? Five of the first six games at home.
Yeah.
And they have taken advantage of that. And we'll see if they take advantage of it on Saturday. But aggressiveness on defense is not going away at all. And
no.
Danny Gonzalez is going to trust his guys.
Yep.
He believes in his players. He is going to embolden them by continuing to call these types of defenses. Okay. Cat Backer asks a variation of a question that we have kind of gone over on recent pods, but I think worth discussing again. Ian Wagner obviously has the strongest leg on the team. What about him is it that keeps him from being our field goal kicker? This was sent before the Oklahoma State game, in which Michael Salgado Medina missed his first field goal attempt. At that point in time, on social media, Justin, everyone was calling for Michael Salgado Medina to be removed. Like, everyone wanted him out. He's not the guy. This is a disaster. Got to have somebody else. Now, MSM redeemed himself. He made a 34-yarder. Then he made a 57-yarder in the second half. And Brent Brennan is through his full support behind Michael Salgado Medina, right? Called him Money Mike.
Yeah.
Right. And told him, like, hey, go out and make this, bang it through. That's the type of coach that Brent is. I don't think they're going to change kickers anytime soon unless Salgado Medina goes into some sort of major slump. Hopefully those kicks will give him confidence. We've mentioned this before regarding Ian Wagner. I am sure that at some point in the summer or early in training camp, they let him kick field goals. And they decided, based on what they saw, that Michael Salgado Medina and Tyler Pershoon were the two guys that they wanted to move forward with. And they needed someone to be the holder, too. So if you remove him from that role, then you have to have someone else be the holder. You're starting from scratch with the whole operation, which is a very important part of kicking a field goal that people don't talk about very much.
Michael Salgado Medina, the Gunnar Maldonado of kickers. Remember when Gunnar Maldonado was just getting blasted by Arizona fans in 2023 for having we were very critical of Gunnar. And then look what happened. He ended the season as the Alamo Bowl defensive MVP. So I think there's something to be said about Brent Brennan's confidence in Funky Cole Medina, MSM, Michael Salgado Medina. You know, sometimes maybe you just need to see one go through. And he saw one go through with that 34-yarder. And then he saw one go through with that 57-yarder. And you know what? All the field goals, the snaps were better. So Avery Salerno got back in the lab and got better. You know, that missed field goal early on, you can't blame the snap. The operation was good. That was all on Salgado Medina. So maybe not that the snapping is getting better. Now that Salgado Medina has seen a couple go through, including a chip shot 34-yarder and then a 57-yarder, maybe this is what gets him going.
Yeah, I'll make a prediction here. MSM is going to have a game-winning field goal at some point this season for the end of the year. And then at that point, he will be a hero amongst the UA fan base. Okay. This one comes from Sean. Special teams, what is the team doing to fix it? He also has a comment. He says, also, you should get the true fan experience and sit on the east side in the sun all day. I did respond to Sean about the second part of that on the X/Twitter platform and said, no, thanks. But I made the lame excuse, Justin, that my computer would overheat if I was sitting over there. I also said, you know, and speaking for many of us, very pale It just wouldn't go well. So,
hey man, we earned our stripes in spring ball and training camp. Like,
true.
No, we were out there on the west side of the stadium under the blazing sun. So
that's true. We've done that many times. Okay. So look, they have devoted a lot of resources to special teams. And what I mean by that is they hired a full-time special teams coach in Craig Nivar, who everyone likes, everyone respects. They're working on it. Trust me, they did more work on special teams in this training camp than like in almost any training camp I can remember, like whole, like long segments in the middle of practice. Right. I mean, those were the ones where we would kind of tune out. But they were doing it, trust me. And I thought they were improved this last game. There weren't as many like notable blunders. You had them as field goal. Luke Weissong did have a muff on one of his punt returns, but that was a tough one. Like he had to run a long distance. And, you know, when you're running forward and the wave of defenders is coming at you and the ball's kind of knuckling a little bit, that's a tough situation. We'll have to ask Luke about that on Tuesday. But I think they're trending in the right direction. I'm not like overly worried about it. Of course, as I say this, you know, they'll probably have some huge blunder in the BYU game that'll have everyone up in arms. So what do you think about the state of the special teams?
Yeah, special teams, I guess like every week it's like the good, the bad, and the ugly. Like they'll have one moment where you're like, oh, okay. Like Jeremiah Patterson's punt return in the season opener. Or Michael Salgado Medina's super long field goal. And then there will be a muffed punt, right? With Jeremiah Patterson against Kansas State, where Marquise Gross-Killebrew kind of knocked into him, and then Luke Weissong's whole thing. So, yeah, it's a work in progress. I would say it's definitely, you know, if we're looking at, you know, all three phases, it's probably the one that has the most concern. But, I don't know, Luke Weissong recovered the muff punt. Michael Salgado Medina eventually made that long field goal. So maybe some of the stuff that they learned from this Oklahoma State game, maybe they can apply moving forward. But yeah, in these games against BYU and these other, you know, tough opponents that they're going to play later on, you can't have any special teams issues whatsoever. I mean, Iowa State showed you that if you are going to commit, have mistakes in special teams, they will make you pay for it. So yeah, it's a work in progress for sure.
All right, I have one more. This is from a frequent contributor, AZ Cat John.
Yeah.
Bigger picture type of question. It seems we are getting much closer to the super conference idea in college football. Will the AZ schools be in or out? And how much does basketball fit into the entrance equation? Okay. I know for a fact that this is something that is always on the mind of UA athletic director Desiree Reed Francois. She does not want to be left behind if college sports goes to this type of super conference model. That is why she is extremely determined to, quote unquote, get football right.
Yeah.
No matter how good you are in men's basketball, and Arizona is obviously very good. Like if it was strictly a men's basketball super league, Arizona's in, like no questions asked. They're like, you know, top 20 program in the country, right? Pretty indisputably. Football's a different story. They're probably more toward the back end. If you're talking about maybe like let's say it's a 70 team super league, they're kind of toward the back end of that 70. So that's something that's probably going to come up within our lifetimes. It's a rapidly changing landscape. Things have changed a lot already. Would not surprise me in the least if college sports went in that direction. What I would like to see is football does the Super League and all the rest of the sports reset to smaller regional geographical conferences like we're used to.
Yeah.
I mean, look, there's no reason they couldn't do that. Like, look at beach volleyball, for example. Didn't they just bring in like South Carolina and Florida State into the Big 12? Like you, depending on what sport it is, like look, ASU plays ice hockey. They don't play ice hockey in the Big 12 because there is no ice hockey in the Big 12.
No.
So that's what I would like to see. I'd like to see like a 70 team, like football super league of like 7-10 team divisions or something. And then put everything else back the way it was. Well, right? We don't need to be sending the Arizona women's soccer team halfway across the country on a Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, and some of these sports too, they play multiple days over in these places, right? Like baseball, softball. I mean, they're going to be on the road and they're going to go all the way over to Orlando for a pretty much like a week. Like that takes a toll on it. And the thing, and we actually talked about this on the radio show, the Big Ten coaches who are bitching and complaining about travel, it's like you guys wanted this. Like James Franklin over here complaining about like, oh, we got to go to LA. My man, you wanted UCLA and USC in the Big Ten. Like, what are you guys complaining about? So anyways, I digress. I think that football should go to this super conference league, and then everything else should be regionalized. But for the time being, it's very important for Arizona to get right in football, because you know what? We saw the landscape change a while ago, and we saw the Pac-12 blow up, and who was left out? It was Washington State and Oregon State, you know, two schools that aren't really known for football, I guess. And they were just kind of the two schools that were left out. They've had some good seasons in the past. I'm not trying to diminish their programs, but you know, when the conference splintered, those two were the only ones left because no one really wanted them because they weren't really the most attractive brands. And so Arizona is an attractive brand for basketball, but for football, that certainly has to be right. And I give Desiree a lot of credit for trying to get that right.
That's it for me, Justin. What you got?
Okay. All right. So my mailbag questions. This one, we'll keep it up with the AZ Cat John train, because he asks, the Big 12 had the second best non-conference record and is by far the best balanced league. My guess is the loser of the Big 12 championship game would be very worthy of a bid. Can a 2-3 loss team from the Big 12 get in? Not a 3-loss team. Maybe not a 2-loss team, but let's just say Texas Tech is in that conversation. You got Iowa State that's still rocking and rolling right now. BYU. Like if you look at the top part of the league and the teams that are the heavy hitters, we could very well see two undefeated teams going up toe-to-toe in that Big 12 championship game, and the loser would still get a bid. But 2-loss, 2-3 loss, I think that's asking for a lot, but I think it's conceivable that the Big 12 could have maybe two undefeated teams going toe to toe. And then maybe if there's like a 1-loss team and they're competitive and they lose, maybe you give them consideration. But yeah, I say probably the best bet is to have two undefeateds in that Big 12 title game.
Yeah. There's no 0% chance that a 3-loss Big 12 team is going to get into the playoff. I think there's a small chance that a 2-loss team could. You obviously, if you win the Big 12 championship, you get in, right? So you would want the team that has more losses to win, if that's the case. Like, let's say that it's a 2-loss team against an unbeaten team. You'd want the 2-loss, for the sake of the conference, you'd want the 2-loss team to win that game. They automatically get in. And then a 1-loss team that was maybe ranked in the top 12 or something would probably still get serious consideration. This is a weird year. And maybe it's indicative of how college football is going to be now that NIL and the transfer portal are so prominent, right? Preseason number one and number two, Penn State and Texas, are out of the top 25 entirely, right? The teams that are at the top of the SEC include the usual suspects like, you know, Georgia and LSU and Alabama, but you know, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Missouri, they're all unbeaten. Yeah, I think that the Big 12 is a good league. I think there are multiple teams that are top 25 worthy. You didn't mention ASU. They still only have one loss, none in the conference, right? Their only loss came on the road against Mississippi State, a game they probably should have won. So I think it would be a great step forward for the Big 12 in terms of prestige and respect if they could get two teams into the CFP this year without there being any sort of automatic qualifier attached to it.
And that's why they didn't do the preseason poll. Avoid the narrative.
I still don't agree about that, but we can talk about that another time.
All right. This one comes from AZ Mexico 1. not really a question, just kind of an observation. And I agree with him. The lack of fans at the games. I was at the game on Saturday, and it was a sad sight. My my co-host, Ali Farhang, Lev, gave me a bunch of guff on radio today on Spears
and
Ali.
As he does, yeah.
And he normally does. But he was just like, you know, your video did not really show the true crowd. So I posted a video of 5 minutes before kickoff. The band's on the field. The team is about to run out. I feel like that's a good time to film how the crowd is. And Ali was like, the crowd was way better than what your video showed. But I'm like, was it really that much better? Because the announced attendance was a little over 40,000. And I'm willing to bet that half that. The stadium was half full. Like, that
or
was
half,
not.
Or half empty.
Or half empty. I'm a positive guy. So I like half full. But yeah, I don't know. It's, I understand like there's a lot of things happening. And like, I think about it from like a family perspective. There's a lot of youth sports happening at noon on Saturday. So like, I get that. Plus, you know, the weather was, it was a little hot. Maybe you figure out ways to incentivize people to get to their seats. Maybe you do like a happy hour where like drinks and food is discounted if you show up at a certain amount of time at the stadium. But I agree, that was a very sad crowd. I felt like Tucson could have done a little bit better, but this week, no excuses. 5 p.m. in October against a top 20 team. This, to me, this should be close to a sellout, if not a sellout.
I think the noon start time was just a killer.
Yeah.
And Arizona has very little, if any, control over that. But people just, I don't think people want to sit in 95 degree heat to watch, you know, Arizona face the worst team in the conference. You know, I think that was the biggest factor. If that game was at 6 o'clock, say at least 10,000 more people would have been in the stands.
Yeah.
But you're right, though. I love that idea of the happy hour, right? Like, you got to, there's definitely that like late arriving or not arriving at all element to the Arizona crowd. They're up on the mall and then they don't come in. So maybe you do. Maybe the hour before the game, discounted drinks, food, etc. Great idea. I bet you if you gave that idea to DRF, that she would be like, you know what? You're onto something there.
Heck yeah. All right. Couple ones, because we'll answer more of these on Spears and Ali during the radio show. But Chris Halligan, do you want a co-pilot for Skyline Chili in Cincinnati? I'm going to try it and expect it to be terrible. Yeah, maybe like a White Castle burger element where it's like, it's the name. Oh, it was a great burger. And then you try it and you're like, what the hell is this? I'm fully expecting that when I try Skyline Chili.
Very, very mixed things about Skyline Chili, but I think you're going to have to try it.
Yes.
Right. Like no doubt about it.
That will be this ain't Tucson.
Yeah.
How many mini candies should be given to legit trick or treaters? Also, did Oklahoma State stack the box to prevent the run as Brennan shared at the post game press conference? Explains why they went pass heavy. Yes. To the last part, you got to give what the defense, you got to take what the defense gives you. And they put 8 guys in the box, which allowed Noah Fifita in the passing game to get going, but you still need to establish that run. So that's one area that I feel like they're going to work on this week. As far as the mini candies for trick-or-treaters, I'm a 2 per kid guy. What say you, Lev?
Yeah, 2 is about right. And look, if you come a little bit later toward the end of the like trick-or-treating window, we might give away more than that. Right. If there's a bunch of candy still left in the bowl, you might cash in. But I think 2 is about the right amount. That's fair.
2. All right. We've got plenty more to answer. We'll do that on Spears and Ali throughout the week. We appreciate you guys for submitting your questions. And that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast podcast. Make sure you subscribe on Apple and Spotify and also check out all of our coverage of Arizona football on Tucson.com and the Wildcaster mobile app. Big one this week, Lev. Number 18, Utah. Or no, Utah. Oh, my gosh. BYU.
Don't make that mistake again.
Good Lord. Man. BYU coming to town.
Yeah.
And I can't wait for this game. It should be a packed house.
Yeah, we'll break it down as part of the Big 12 Bonanza in the pod later this week with Jordan Hamm. And we will discuss another bad beat involving the Colorado Buffaloes as part of that segment. Oh, that was rough.
That's brutal.
On Saturday.
Brutal.
So bad.
All right. We appreciate
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you guys for listening, as always. And thank you for watching on Tucson.com. We'll see y'all later in the week.